Well, today is the Day of Atonement. It's a great day. I think maybe this is my favorite feast day. For all that it symbolizes, all that it means, it's more than a day of fasting. It is that, but also much more. But fasting is a vitally important part of this day. I thought I'd start by reading from our fundamental beliefs document on page 37. About the Day of Atonement, an annual Sabbath following shortly after the previous one, and by that they mean the Feast of Trumpets that we've just been through. That reminds me, most of you know I work at the University of Georgia, and I got a note, a message day before yesterday from a student, I won't be there Wednesday. It's the day, it's Yom Kippur. And I responded back, that's okay, I won't be there either. See you on Thursday. The Day of Atonement, an annual Sabbath following shortly after the previous one, points to the time when Satan the devil will be bound for 1,000 years. That's why I really like this day, among other things. It's just hard to imagine the difference that's going to make. And then we point to Leviticus 16 and some verses there in Revelation 20. It pictures the removal of the primary cause of sin. Katie, we were talking about that this morning on the way in. Satan and his demons, until God removes the original instigator of sin, mankind will continue to be led into disobedience and suffering. So this day means so much. It pictures so much of what we need. This holy day also pictures our high priest, Jesus Christ, making atonement for the sins of all mankind. This act of atonement at one-ment allows us to be reconciled or at one with God. So what special things are pictured in these holy days, which I had no clue about before running into the church? Let's turn to Matthew 17. Matthew 17, here we have a situation where Christ's disciples tried to throw out one of Satan's army, one of Satan's helpers, and they were not successful. They found they couldn't do it. Matthew 17 and verse 19. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately and said, "Why could we not cast this one out?" And in verse 18, Christ basically said it was because your faith was not strong enough. Or in verse 20 and verse 21, "However, this kind does not go out except for by prayer and fasting." Evidently a strong member of Satan's army. Today pictures removal of the chief demon, Satan the devil. It is a day of fasting, which helps us to draw closer to God and therefore farther away from Satan. Makes me think about what we just read, what Christ said, this kind of evil being and his evil nature that leads to permanent death, our death, which is what he desires. This nature that he tries to imprint into us does not go out except by prayer and fasting. How important is it that we participate in the Day of Atonement, including fasting? Let's look at Leviticus 23 and verse 27. Leviticus 23 and 27. And when we have split sermon messages, I really like to go first because I can call out verses and I can watch Dr. Ross wince as I take all of his. Hopefully not, I'm sure not. Leviticus 23:27. Also the 10th day of this month, so we've passed the new moon, 10 days, shall be the holy day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls. And we know that means fasting. And offer an offering made by fire for the Lord. And you shall do no work on that same day, for it is the Day of Atonement. And I know this young Jewish fellow is going to come to me because he thinks I'm Jewish. I'm going to have to tell him, no, actually I'm not. But our church still believes these days are in force, and they are. For it is the Day of Atonement, to make atonement for you before the Lord your God. How important is it? For any person who is not afflicted in soul on that same day shall be cut off from his people, meaning the church. So this is quite important that we're here and that we do this. Is fasting just for atonement? Or should we fast on other days besides atonement? This fasting we're doing today. Let's look in Luke 5 and verse 33. Luke 5, 33 to 35. Just doesn't read right when you're in John. Not that John isn't good, but Luke 5, 33. Then they said to him, "Why do the disciples of John fast often and make prayers? And likewise, those of the Pharisees, but your disciples, yours, eat and drink." And he said to them, "Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them. Then they will fast in those days." So John's disciples, we see here, fasted regularly. And Christ indicated his disciples would also fast after his crucifixion and return to heaven. We could visit Acts 13. I won't go there in Acts 14 to see this happening in the new church established by Christ and members fasting before important decisions they made, including things like ordinations. The church then considers today, the Day of Atonement, to be the primary biblical model for fasting, which is a 24-hour period from sundown to sundown without food and water. So today, on the day of fasting, I'd like to address two questions. We could title this message Biblical Fasting. I think I really never got around to coming up with a title, but that would work. Two questions. First, what period of time defines a biblical fast? Is one day an absolute minimum? We might be surprised at some of what we find. And two, must both food and water be abstained from as part of fasting? So the first question, what period of time defines a biblical fast? And in beginning to answer that, I'll just say that a search of the Bible will show that a duration of time is not specifically mentioned to define what does and does not constitute a fast. However, when fasts are mentioned in the context of duration, we'll find that days are the typical, but not always, benchmark. Let's look at a few examples of what appears in the Bible as time units of fasting. Jeremiah 36. Let's go back to Jeremiah. Jeremiah 36. And this chapter, this verse is actually talking about today, the Day of Atonement. Jeremiah 36. And verse 6. And what we're doing today. Verse 6. "You go, therefore, and read from the scroll, which you have written at my instruction, the words of the Lord, in the hearing of the people of the Lord's house on the day of fasting." The day of atonement. The day of fasting. "And you shall also read them in the hearing of all Judah who come from their cities." So this day of fasting, today, atonement, is described as, when we're talking about duration, the day. And we know how the Bible marks days as being from evening to evening. And again, we often do use this, what we just read about. This fasting day is our model for fasting. Let's look in Isaiah 58. This chapter describes something we don't want to do or be doing today, inappropriate fasting by Israel. But still, let's note the language here in Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58 in verse 3. And here the people are questioning God. "Why have we fasted?" they say. "And you have not seen." Why are you not paying attention, God? "Why have we afflicted our souls?" And here we have these words attached to fasting, "afflicted our souls, and you take no notice." And God answers here, "In fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exploit all the laborers." So God is critical of the way they're fasting. In the day of your fast. And in verse 4, indeed, you fast for strife and debate, and to strike with the fist of wickedness, you will not fast as you do this day. Make your voice heard on high. It is a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul. It is to bow down his head like a bulrush, and to spread out sackcloth and ashes. Would you call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? So here we find in these passages about the fast, a day for a man to afflict his soul and an acceptable day. We could turn to 1 Samuel 7. I won't go there in verse 6 and several others that will give the same words. These verses describe a situation where Israel fasted that day, again using the day. And we know there are longer fasts described in the Bible. Let's look in the book of Esther, right before Job. Right before the book of Job, or coming from the other side, 1 and 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Job. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job. In Esther, verse 16, chapter 4, verse 16. Esther 4:16, and I think you're familiar with Esther's situation here that she found herself in. And she said, Esther 4:16, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will be fasting likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. So this was a difficult situation. Neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. We have, again, the day as the unit to define this fast in Esther. We could go to 1 Samuel 31:13. I won't go there. 1 Chronicles 10:12, and both describe 7-day fasts. And 40-day fasts are described for Moses. In Exodus 34, for Elijah in 1 Kings 19, as is a 40-day fast for Christ in the New Testament, Matthew 4, 2. For all of these, the unit of time associated with fast is the day. At what time of day do we typically find fast ending then? Let's look in Judges 20. It's probably a time a lot of us are looking forward to today. In Judges chapter 20 and verse 26. Judges 20:26. Then all the children of Israel, that is all the people, went up and came to the house of God, and they wept. They sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. So they fasted until evening. We'd find the same thing in 2 Samuel 1, verse 12, and elsewhere, that fasts typically last until evening, which defines the end of a day. So this is consistent, again, with the day as the unit of time for the fast, since biblically days begin and end at evening. There is one example, only one that I'm aware of, where a fast didn't end at sundown. I won't go there, but I know it's familiar to you. It's in 2 Samuel 12, where David is in the last day of a 7-day fast for his infant son of Bathsheba, Uriah's wife, who died because of David's sin. And in verse 22 of that chapter, David said, and this is the NIV, not for any particular reason beyond that that's what I was cut and pasting from. While the child was still alive, said David, I fasted and wept. I thought, who knows? The Lord may be gracious to me and let the child live. Verse 23, but now that he is dead, and this again is on the 7th day of the fast, why should I go on fasting? And so in this case, David ended his fast on the 7th day, before sundown, because he had received his answer from God. And he allowed his servants to come and attend to him and to feed him. Are there any examples in the Bible of fasts lasting less than a day? That was an interesting to me, and the answer is there appear to be. Let's look in 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel in chapter 1 of that book. 2 Samuel 1 and verses 1 to 4. And why would such a fast be started is this. 2 Samuel 1, 1 through 4. Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had stayed 2 days in Ziklag. On the third day, behold, it happened that a man from Saul's camp, with his clothes torn and dust on his head, arrived there. So it was when he came to David that he fell on the ground and prostrated himself. And David said to him, "Where have you come from?" So the man said, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." Then David said to him, "How did the matter go?" So he was very interested in this. Please tell me what happened. And the man answered, "The people have fled from the battle. Many of the people are fallen and dead, and Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also." So this was terrible news for David. David had always protected Saul and honored his office. He had opportunities to kill him. He didn't. They were enemies. But Jonathan in particular was best friend of David. They were very close. So this was terrible news for David that Jonathan was no longer alive. And in verse 11, "Therefore David took hold of his own clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son." So here we have a man arriving from Saul's camp. And I won't go back to 1 Samuel 31. It's right to the left of where we are now in your Bibles. Well, we read about the death of Saul during the attack of the Philistines, and how Saul fell on his own sword rather than let himself be caught and tortured. And the Philistines found his body the next day, cut off his head, hung his body as a display on the wall of Bethshan. And then Israelites from Jabesh Gilead heard of this, and they marched through the night to get Saul's body. And they burned his body and collected the bones from the ashes and buried those, and they began a 7-day fast of their own. You can look at verse 13, the last verse of 1 Samuel 31. "Then they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. So that's in association with the death of Saul and of Jonathan. These events appear to have occurred at the time the man of 2 Samuel 1 we just read about is traveling to David's camp and after the death of Saul. So presumably, this man arrived during daylight hours and revealed to David what he revealed to him. He could have arrived before dawn. Doesn't really matter in this case. Regardless, some part of a day had passed when David tore his clothes and began fasting until evening, verses 11 through 12 we just read. This was an emotion-packed moment for David, who responded by immediately entering a fast until that evening. So this is the type of situation we don't like to find ourselves in, where something terrible has happened. I don't know how all of you respond. I typically just don't want to eat anyway and kind of quit. And so David entered a fast when he found out that Jonathan and Saul were dead, and he continued until that evening, from all appearances here, a fast of less than 1 day. A similar second fast is found in 2 Samuel 3, so we're almost there. Let's flip over a page or two. After the death of Abner, 2 Samuel 3 and verse 30. "So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner as he had killed their brother, Asahel, at Gibeon in the battle. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, 'Tear your clothes.' So we're not at an evening. We're not at the beginning of a biblical day. He's found out this happened. Tear your clothes, gird yourself with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner. And King David followed his coffin. And in verse 35, and when all the people came to persuade David to eat food while it was still day, and this gets back to when to fast end, you can see David's resolve here. David took an oath saying, God do so to me, as happened to Abner, and more also, if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down, once I have declared this fast and once I have started it, which we just read about him tearing his clothes and starting the fast to mourn for Abner. That command in verse 11 marks the beginning of the fast. I'm sorry, that's in verse 31, which again begins with David's realization of the situation that he finds himself in rather than at sundown. And then that fast ended at sundown, verse 35. So in summary then, for the first question, with the exception of two examples of unexpected traumatic events, and this is Saul's death and Abner's death, fasts we find in the Bible are described with the day as the unit of time and one day as the minimum that we'll find. This might also be supported by Matthew 6. Let's go to the New Testament and see where Christ is speaking here. Matthew 6, in verse 16, Christ is talking about the Pharisees and fasting. Matthew 6:16. Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance. So we're not to advertise that we're going without food and water. For they disfigure their faces, that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. A sad countenance and disfigured faces used as inappropriate ways to gain attention during fasting, thereby advertising one's afflicted soul. Verse 17, but you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in a secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. And so logically, we might not be afflicted to the level described here, the sad countenance and disfigured faces, with a duration of less than one day of fasting. If, for instance, we elected to skip a meal, that might not logically fit the description we find here. We sometimes also make use of a historic document from Mr. Armstrong that you may have seen, the Ambassador College Correspondence Course, Lesson 48, about fasting and how to fast in our literature. I've got a copy of that at home. That is one of the older ones. On page 8 of that, Mr. Armstrong said, fasting is a humbling experience. It cuts us down. You learn that you are merely a very physical human being. You learn that if you don't get that supply of physical food, you eventually will die. You don't see how weak and insignificant you really are, and that's part of the point of today, until you go without food and drink. Fasting brings you to grips with reality and what he means of your dependence on God. And you realize that you have no strength on your own. And then at the end of page 12 in the same document, a section begins, or Mr. Armstrong begins one. It's called How Long in the title. And Mr. Armstrong says, the Bible does not specify, except for atonement, which is one day. Continuing, generally speaking, fasting for spiritual reasons may be from 1 to 3 days. If the problem is serious or the need urgent, it certainly would not be wrong to fast longer. And Mr. Armstrong does mention fasts of less than a day in this document. However, only in the context of teaching new people how to fast. The title of that section is Learning How to Fast Progressively. Or for the very young, or for those of advanced age who can no longer safely fast for 24 hours. For new people and the young, Mr. Armstrong indicated some may need to learn to fast progressively and then gradually work up to fasting for 1 or more days at a time. Start with one meal. Then try two meals. Finally, the next time, go to a full 24 hours. That way you have gradually accustomed yourself to fasting. So his point is that we can learn to go for a full day. And then Mr. Armstrong returned to the theme of the section that fasting is defined in days of one or more. His statement immediately after learning to fast was, you'll find that fasting for a day or two is not as difficult as you may have thought. Question number two then, do biblical fasts include going without both food and water? It's probably a simpler question. Let's turn to Matthew 5, 6. We're almost there already. Matthew 5 and verse 6, you'll find this quoted in a number of our fasting documents. Matthew 5, verse 6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Hunger and thirst for righteousness, something we're doing today. Is hungering and thirsting part of the church's historic and continuing practice and position for days of fasting? It's an easy question to answer just going to our webpage and searching. I did that, putting in fasting, and the first one that came up for me was a 1996 document we post. What does the Bible teach about fasting? And this document begins with these words in large type. Fasting, dash, going without food and water, dash, is mentioned often in the Bible. Other sentences in the article include, Jesus, knowing that his disciples would fast, left ample instruction in both the Old and New Testaments about how to go about it, and the purpose for going for a time without food and water. Food and drink is the actual text there. Another sentence, God takes no pleasure in our going without food and drink. This is a reference back to Isaiah 58 and inappropriate fasting. In our going without food and drink to importune him for selfish gain at others' expense. That word importune, I kind of knew but had to look up. Ask someone pressingly and persistently to give us something or to do something for us. But the main point, God takes no pleasure in our going without food and drink. In association with fasting, the next fasting document I opened, and these are in order in terms, I think, of number of hits they get on our webpage, on our church site, was published in 2006, entitled Fasting, a Spiritual Power Tool. And you can open these two. It included these sentences about fasting. This article addresses fasting for one's spiritual health, which involves abstaining from food and drink, while spending a lot of extra time in prayer and Bible study. Another sentence, a healthy person who is not perspiring much can go without food and water for about 3 days. And the last one I'll do, God wants us to hunger and thirst for righteousness. Matthew 5, 6, which is the one we just read. And then I stopped opening these documents because I felt I had an accurate picture, and this was what I was aware was there, of the church's teaching. There were others that popped up that you could see without opening them. I think the next was called The Benefits of Fasting, United Church of God, February 2, 2013, and the line right there on the web link page, fasting is choosing to not eat or drink for a period of time. Is that biblically based? And of course, that's what we want. Let's go back to Esther 4, there before Job again. Esther 4 and verse 16. And we just read this, but I was emphasizing then that days are the units of fast that we find in the Bible. Esther 4:16, Esther said, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me, neither eat nor drink. She says with this fast, for 3 days, night and day, my maids and I will fast likewise, neither eat nor drink. Let's go to Jonah. That's the sixth of the minor prophets: Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, and then Jonah. I'm in Micah, so I'm one too far. There we go. Jonah 3 and verse 5. And Mr. Charlie Graby was just here recently. Looked familiar to me as I was going through this. Jonah 3, this is the people of Nineveh. Verse 5. The people of Nineveh believed God with Jonah's warning, proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. Then word came to the king of Nineveh as he arose from his throne and laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by decree of the king and his nobles, saying, "Let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink water." And so our literature points us to both of these sections of Scripture and others that describe fasting as not eating or drinking. To answer the answer to question number two, we neither eat or drink nor drink while biblically fasting. So those are the two questions I wanted to look at. And with that, it's time to close. How can we summarize? I know this is all very clear to most of us, and nothing I've said should be a surprise in any way. I have, however, had some questions come to me, though, so thought it might be good to review this important area. The summary of what we've seen today is that fasting duration is defined in terms of days, with one day being the minimum. The only exception we find in the Bible is emergency situations where a fast were immediately entered. And of course, that's absolutely fine. David, death of Saul, death of Abner. We saw that fast ended evening, the biblical end of the day, and that David was rather emphatic about not ending a fast he had entered before evening. That was the one in 2 Samuel 3:35, where he said, "God do to me and more also, if I taste bread or anything before the sun goes down." And we saw that we elect, it is voluntary, to go without both food and water when we fast, Esther 4, Jonah 3. So let's continue today on this special high day of atonement, hungering and thirsting for God's righteousness and looking toward the coming great day when Satan will be removed from this world.